Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm joined once again after a one-week hiatus because our creative juices ran dry after Hard Knocks was finished.
It was my bye week.
Our reality juice, the tap ran dry.
It was my deceptively fast bye week.
So now I think we're going to do this. You are the noted station gambling expert.
Yeah.
Do you have a nickname yet? Do you have like Sean the Badger or
no,
something like that?
No. But I've been joking during our show that my domain within which I give these picks, I call Sean Vada.
Sean
Vada. Which is like Bovada, but with Sean in front of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you trademark that?
It's not a bad idea. You know what? While we're sitting here talking, I'm going to see if SeanVada.com is available.
Get on the trademarkcommission.org or whatever it is.
I just put it into Safari and it can't find the server. So but one of the listeners is going to squat on it now and make me pay for it. And I'm also a big fan of the phrase GambleCast, because I have always felt, Seth, that with the advent of all these different feeds that you can watch games through now, you know, we get everything served to us on a silver platter, like the college football championship game. If you don't want to watch the regular feed, you can watch the coaches sitting there BSing about it, or you can watch another feed that's very numbers driven. I have always felt that there should be a feed that you can watch of two guys that aren't really doing play-by-play. They're just watching the game and observing and giving their observations, but they each have a ton of bets on the game, like prop bets, and the best would be if they were on opposite sides, because then there would be a little bit of tension.
Right, and I'm coming around to it. I honestly was so scared of gambling for such a long time, on sports especially, because it's drilled into your head how bad a thing it is unless you go to Boston College. And I get it now, because you're watching and you're realizing, oh, wow, on a normal Thursday night football game, not like last night's Thursday night football game, which was actually exciting, it brings so much more emotional investment in it if you're literally financially invested
in it. Well, and last night's was exciting from that standpoint, too, because it was Cleveland Browns -3.5.
Right.
Which the last time the Browns were favored in a game was probably a couple of years ago, because they've won one game in the last 2 years. So it was a game where it looked like the Jets were going to run away with that thing. And if you had Jets +3.5, like I did last night, I felt really good about that bet. And then Baker got in that game, and I almost at halftime placed a second half bet on the Browns. You know, you can bet the second half of the game just to kind of get a nice middle. You know, where maybe the final score lands somewhere in between my Jets +3.5 and my Cleveland second half bet. I didn't do it. I should have, because then I would have at least balanced out the two bets.
Yeah.
You know, just paid juice. So, but last night's game was really exciting. It was, you know, -3.5. So that 2-point conversion where they tied the game up was really critical. And
I almost think that maybe I'm starting to come around to this, to the point where, can you call yourself a true knowledgeable sports fan if you don't gamble on the games? If you think about like learning how to play pool,
yeah,
like you're pretty good at it, but then once you start gambling and doing it for money, all of a sudden you get really, really good at pool. I feel like if I want to genuinely know exactly what's going on in the league, I need to have money on the line.
I've said this to a lot of people. When I have been at my most knowledgeable about certain sports is when I've been betting on them.
Yeah.
You know, there have been years where I didn't bet on basketball, didn't bet on the NBA, didn't bet on college basketball. And then there have been years where I've bet, I don't say heavily, like for me heavily, you know, like I'm not my max bet on a game is like $100 or something like that. But I'm never more knowledgeable about a team, about a player, about a sport than when I'm betting on that team, player, or sport, because you're emotionally invested. So you really do sense the nuances of what a winning player is and what a losing player is. Like all those stats they throw at you about, you know, yards per attempt and, you know, all the, you know, there are certain guys you just know from gambling on them, like, this is not a guy I trust in this situation, or this is a guy I want to fade every chance I get and bet against him.
I'm always amazed with people that bet the horses, just how in tune they get with specific jockeys.
Yeah, that's next level. I'm not there. I bet the horses when I go to the Derby or if I go to the track.
Well, it's the same thing. You have to be – if you actually want to be good at it, however you define good, you got to be watching every day, like, at the same track and know all those same guys, right?
Yeah. You need to know all those little details. So, but your hypothesis, like, I think you're on the right track, in my opinion, where I think you can be a knowledgeable, good host or broadcaster without gambling. But I do think unequivocally, if you were to gamble on games, the emotional investment that you make has you watching the game that much closer. Mm.
And it makes you – it keeps your edge.
It keeps you completely engaged.
It was like when I started taking money for sex. I became much better at it.
You got better
at
it.
People have an expectation.
It makes sense. You don't want to leave any customers dissatisfied.
I might be the opposite when it comes to when I get paid for a speaking appearance. I had this last night. Mike Meltzer and I went out to speak to a group of lawyers. And I almost feel that when I'm getting paid for it, I try too hard. And so I try to go into – now I'm trying to go into these speaking appearances when I'm getting paid and act like I'm not getting paid. Last night, I don't think it went that well. I wasn't pleased with my performance. I went very loose. I had Mike's actually sitting in the studio with us. He's shaking his head. He's saying it went very well. I brought Mike along to be my college football expert.
Okay.
But I thought we were going to be I didn't know what kind of crowd I was going to be speaking to. And I figured out real early on that there weren't that many avid NFL fans there.
Oh, wow.
And I'd say less than maybe 25% of them were even Texans fans.
Yeah.
So I went in with a bunch of Texans propaganda for these people, and I had to change course immediately. So they're being paid for it. It went pretty well.
I thought maybe you brought Mike because he goes to law school.
I didn't
know. If I'm going to be in this room full of lawyers, I better have somebody with me that knows a little something about lawyering.
You know, they were bankruptcy attorneys.
Oh, really?
And it was interesting, whatever stereotypes you have about lawyers, which are largely overblown.
Yeah.
But these guys were like the opposite of that stereotype.
Yeah.
They seemed like people that worked with clients who were beleaguered, and they had to have some human side to them.
You
know,
like
you can't be hard-edged a-hole when your clients are always like your client is at the disadvantaged state whenever you're going in anywhere.
Yeah, you got to have a bedside manner when you're that kind of attorney.
These guys had actually worked on the local Comcast, the CSN Houston case and everything. So I had a little firsthand experience there. I was taking checks from a broadcast network that was going under.
I was too. Did you get all those notifications like every 3 weeks about the progress of the whole bankruptcy?
Yeah, I didn't.
And stuff?
I wasn't making enough money off of them to pay attention.
Neither was I. Man, I got my $100 every time I go to a Kevin Eschenfelder show.
I was like, assume, like, look, if this $100 check doesn't go through, it's not going to break me.
No, I wasn't like James Palmer or something like that. But I know, but I got a check. Like, I probably did that show maybe once a week back in the day.
You pay child support. What's it like when you have different gigs and you have smaller checks like that?
Yeah.
Does it get to be a clerical pain in the ass?
No, because ultimately it's all decided off of my tax return.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So at the end, you don't have to change the economics every single time you get a check.
No, and I never – sometimes people have to have their child support garnished from their paycheck.
Uh-huh.
Like if the lawyer's involved.
Even on a 1099.
Or your spouse. Yeah, I don't know about a 1099, but definitely from your main employer, there's a lot of times where people have the child support garnished. That's one of those things where if the divorce is super contentious, like the receiving spouse will make the ex-spouse do that, sometimes just to stick it to him a little bit. I get along good with my ex-wife, so we've got an understanding.
I feel like if I were paying alimony and even if I hated my ex-spouse, I would do whatever I could to not keep my employer in the loop. I don't want to, like, okay, look, I despise you. I don't think you deserve this money, but I'm going to be a good soldier because I don't want my employer getting involved.
Once that first penny gets garnished, they have a window into your world.
That's right. They're like, this is the guy.
Yeah.
Technically, they're not supposed to know, right? But if it's a small enough company, And the boss is the HR guy.
At the very least, our HR person is not here locally anymore, but at the very least, and I trust our former HR director.
Yeah.
But at the very least.
Now you don't even know who our HR director is.
Yeah, at the very least, they're going to know because you got to fill out paperwork for it.
Right,
yeah.
Right. I don't need that window into my world
no.
being open. Okay, so if we go this week, we're calling you. Okay, so we don't have a name for you specifically.
Okay.
We'll think about that. We'll brainstorm this over time. Gamblecast isn't trademarked?
I don't know that it is.
I
really
maybe
should
need to
trade.
Stop talking about this before until you have that. That seems like a really viable name for at least even the website and whatnot.
Yeah. I just put in Gamblecast and it comes to some sort of intro page, like just one of those home. Welcome to your site. This is your homepage.
Yeah, somebody owns that.
Yeah.
Somebody owns that and they're probably sitting on it waiting to get like $20,000
yeah,
for it. I'm shocked sometimes. Anything that has sports in the .com,
yeah.
Like almost any three letters sports, like I was going to do DFC sports for deceptively.
Yeah.
DFP Sports, deceptively fast podcast sports.com.
Yeah.
Nope, can't do it. $10,000 if you want that. Somebody's sticking to that.
Yeah.
Sports is such a popular website.
We can call this the Gamblecast if you want to.
Okay, so the Friday Gamblecast.
The Friday Gamblecast, yeah.
The deceptively fast Friday Gamblecast.
Yeah,
it's
Gamblecast.
Got a ring to it.
It does.
What's your strong feeling this week?
I have a few of them. I'll start in the NFL, and I put my best bets up on HoustonPress.com, but this is more fun because you and I can talk about it. And I write a paragraph about
right.
it. This is more fun.
Blurbs.
Because I can get your take on it.
You can get my completely novice, not even novice
level. You're a former NFL player.
Right, who never gambled on the games as far as anybody knows.
Yeah, but you can at least tell me if my theories are asinine.
Oh, okay, good, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Probably my favorite NFL play of the week this week is the Ravens minus – it's actually up to -5.5 now. It was -5 when I got it against the Denver Broncos. And here's my rationale on that one. The Broncos have played two home games so far, and the Broncos are lights out at home in September. They're like 30-3 or something like that straight up over the last however many years in September in Denver. And the theory behind that is – that the elevation, guys aren't quite in football shape yet, especially this year. That's all we hear about in Houston is how rusty everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
So guys are going to altitude, and the Denver Broncos have an inherent advantage with that. They've won both their games, but it's been by a combined total of 5 points against two teams that are both 0-2 right now in Seattle and Oakland. I think Seattle's a little better than the 0-2 they've shown. I think Oakland might be really bad.
Yeah, but that game offensively was real dicey until the end last week.
So now you have Denver going on the road for the first time. They're going a couple time zones over and playing an early game, which is always tricky for Mountain and Pacific teams playing games that are, you know, 10, 11 o'clock your body time. And I think the Ravens are a pretty good team. I know they smoked Buffalo the first week. The Cincinnati game was kind of back and forth on Thursday night last week. But they've had – that's the other thing. The Ravens have had 10 days to get ready for this game. Meanwhile, the Broncos are traveling cross-country with a regular week of rest. I just really like this situation. I don't think the Broncos are as good as their 2-0 record, and I think the Ravens might be pretty decent this year.
I think the Broncos' defense might be finally back on track, but I think the Ravens – are going to deliver on a lot of the promise they showed in the preseason.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as, look, Joe Flacco's strength is his arm strength.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sometimes has the wide receivers to complement it, sometimes he doesn't. John Brown, who I've been a huge fan of ever since he torched the Texans in the preseason, not that I'm happy he torched the Texans in the preseason 4 or 5 years ago.
It was O'Brien's first preseason game.
Yeah, and he took the heart out of the Texans' soul in a preseason game. A preseason game, number one, he's got that genuine deep seed. He's got Michael Crabtree, a guy who I counted out as dead 5 years ago, obviously has had his resurgence. And I think that Joe Flacco, simply from the pressure from Lamar Jackson and from being actually healthy, is going to be a much different Joe Flacco this year. I think the West Coast going to East Coast, I know that statistically it makes sense and it's true. I agree with it just from a physiological standpoint. It's just so – I was a guy that was always very rigid with my schedule, my sleep schedule, all that. And even just going to the West Coast, I would get so messed up. You'd play an afternoon game on the West Coast and – if you're an early riser, which I am, I was up at 3:30 in the morning.
Yep.
There's nothing I could do to go back to sleep. And by the time you play the football game, it just feels like forever. And then conversely, these West Coast teams, even though it's only a 2-hour difference from Mountain Time, it's just a it's such a long trek. The flying actually takes something out of you physiologically. Your body clock is – what time is that game? Is that
it's a 1 o'clock
It's a
Easter.
1 o'clock game, yeah. So you're playing at 11 a.m. by your body clock.
Yeah.
It takes a lot out of you. It's just – you feel like you're not – when you even going from the central time zone over to the East Coast, when I was all of a sudden playing at a it just felt – no, it's actually – I apologize. When I first came to Houston and we started playing our games at noon instead of 1 o'clock – that was an adjustment my first season here because it felt like, man, I'm not ready to play football at noon by my body clock.
Right.
So I think when you go from the West Coast to the East Coast and you're playing those 1 o'clock games Eastern time, you're just not ready for it.
Yeah, I think it's a little something. Just here, just one other stat to keep in mind. John Harbaugh, you know, sometimes there are certain coaches who are really good with either extra rest or an extra week to prepare. We've always heard about how great Andy Reid is with an extra week. John Harbaugh with 9+ days of rest, 16-5 in his last 21 games straight up, 14-7 against the spread.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So he's I have always – how do you feel about that as a measure of a coach when they have the more preparation time, they have the advantage?
I think there's something to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you would know better than I would, but I think there's – I think when it's a big enough sample size like that, it's something that definitely needs to be factored in.
Andy Reid is the one – doesn't he have kind of a he's okay in season openers, but after bye weeks, he's devastatingly
good.
He's
incredible with time to prepare.
It's strange to me that he's not as good in the opening week where he's had a whole bunch of time to prepare.
Well,
other than that, he hasn't had time to see the tendencies of his opponent.
And so has his opponent had all that time to prepare as well. When you think about it, you know, a lot of times teams aren't coinciding bye weeks with each other.
Yeah.
You know, one team's getting an advantage over another most of the time.
Okay, so I like the Ravens. I think you might have turned me around on that one.
Were you thinking Broncos in that game?
That's
one of the games we have to pick for our picks on the air this week.
Yeah, we do those picks on air straight up, so it screws up everything when it comes to the memory. Okay, I'm with you on the Ravens. I'm going to start gambling this weekend.
All right. My second one that I like is the Eagles -7. This one's actually up to -7.5, which scares me a little bit. But the Eagles -7 over the Indianapolis Colts. The Eagles are coming off a really bad loss to Tampa Bay last week. It was a loss that wasn't as close as the final score looked, so they look really bad. Carson Wentz is coming back this week, which I think will give the Eagles a big boost. They're going to be at home. The Colts have kind of a weird thing going where they're traveling to the East Coast twice in 2 weeks to play opponents that are out of conference. So these are games that matter the least to the Colts, that they're traveling. They travel to Washington, and they won last week. So that's another thing. If the Colts had been one of these 0-2 teams, I would have thought they'd be a little more desperate. But they beat Washington last week, which they weren't expected to do. So it's a little bit of house money. They're not expected to win this week. So I just think that dynamic of going from Indy to Washington, back to Indy for the week, and then back out to Philly for the week to play NFC teams that you're not used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never see the next time they see the Redskins and the Eagles is going to be 4 years from now.
I'm curious about the way I'm hearing Andrew Luck being talked about, which is that, hey, you know, they're breaking him in, they're working him in slowly, they're doing shorter, more efficient routes, he's getting rid of the ball quickly. That's all well and good, but Andrew Luck is – it's not the same as a player coming back from a knee injury.
No.
Or something where you might want to protect him. I feel like he's either got it or he doesn't. And – unless Frank Reich is this master strategist that is genuinely going to be able to just keep something close to the vest until they really, really need it, I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
I'm more want to think that he might just not have that incredible, like you like to call him, that superhuman trait.
Superpower.
Superpower that he has, which one of the things for him is just his incredible arm strength and his touch on the deep ball. Until I really see it, I'm not going to believe that it's there, and teams are going to start to adjust for that.
Yeah, the other thing, you know, that scares me a little bit in this game, but I feel strongly enough about the Eagles winning this game, and I feel strongly enough about the home field advantage and the dynamic of the Colts. But I guess if I were caveating the other side, Frank Reich should have some familiarity with the Eagles having been their OC last year.
He's got
I don't know how much of an advantage.
No. I think that's a big advantage because he knows more about the Eagles than the Eagles know about him.
Yeah.
He wasn't calling plays for them. He doesn't know how Frank Reich is, what he's really thinking about that team. So his organizational knowledge is better than their organizational knowledge of him.
Yep. Agreed. And my other NFL pick is the Patriots coming off of the loss to Jacksonville. They got embarrassed. That was another game where it wasn't as close as the final score would indicate.
Yeah.
31-20 was the final score, and the Jacksonville Jaguars took the Patriots to the woodshed. I just, anytime the Patriots lose, my antenna is up to bet on them the following week. I got in on them at under a touchdown at Matt Patricia and the Lions. Kind of weird that Belichick is getting two of his former assistants in the first 2 weeks of the season, or first 3 weeks of the season. But I just think the Lions are a disaster. The final score of their game last week is super deceptive. It was 30-27. The Niners destroyed the Lions.
The Lions were never in that game.
And so they've spent the entire season virtually never in a game so far. Bill Belichick, the last two seasons, 5-0 against the spread coming off of a loss.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, the more time he has to work with unfamiliar receivers, that tends to work in his favor. The big X factor here, I'm guessing, would be Josh Gordon.
Yeah, and how much
do you even factor him in?
No, I don't.
You assume that if he's used at all, it's going to be in a minimal capacity.
I didn't think about him for 1 second when I was handicapping this game because I think it's going to be sparingly that they use him.
Belichick is pretending that Josh Gordon's not even on the team as he's
that's kind of what I did in my handicapping. Good. Well, I feel better about doing that.
No, he hasn't. He didn't even acknowledge that the trade had gone through. Even
after everything
was official, he said in his press conference, was it yesterday or the day before, that he wasn't, until the trade is final, we're not going to talk about it. The trade's final, Bill.
Yeah.
He's going out to practice this afternoon.
Did you like the trade?
I like the trade. If it's the Patriots,
yeah.
I suppose, because for one, they've demonstrated the ability to absorb guys like that. And then they're not afraid to cut bait very, very quickly, like with Albert Haynesworth, if it's not going to work out. So I like the trade because I don't think they gave up a whole lot.
Yeah.
If that drops down to a 7th-round pick, if Josh Gordon doesn't play 10 games, I mean, there's 14 games left in the season. If Josh Gordon is active for 10 games, then Josh Gordon is doing something right.
Yeah.
And when it comes to will Josh Gordon make it, I feel bad for Randy Moss that he's being dragged into this conversation because
he was the depressed asset that they had traded 4 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Well, because the Patriots, they talk about, hey, the Patriots brought in Randy Moss, and Randy Moss was great for them. And, hey, Josh Gordon is not always the ideal happy camper either. Maybe he's just like Randy Moss. Randy Moss did actually show up to games.
Yeah.
Randy Moss wasn't suspended time after time.
Those are different issues, too. I mean, I've heard
one's an addiction issue.
Right. One, Josh Gordon, you can't trust him because he can't trust himself.
Right.
Randy Moss was just going through what became a pattern eventually, but they got him at a time where he was pissing off his most recent employer. Mm-hmm. That's how he left. He left New England that way. In 2009, they end up – I forget if they cut him or they traded him, but he wound up being a Tennessee Titan for like 2 weeks, and then he wound up with Minnesota for the rest of that season.
Michael Lombardi was talking about this, and he had been with Cleveland when Josh Gordon was there. Okay. I don't think he drafted Josh Gordon, but it was when Josh Gordon was very, very productive when he had his 1,500-plus yards receiving.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that sticks out when you hear people talk about Josh Gordon is that he doesn't have a love for the game of football the way some other athletes who have addiction issues still love football. Like mm-hmm. Michael Irvin had substance abuse issues, but the thing that always stuck with him and the thing that he always came back to was that he just loved football.
He'd still be playing if he could right now, Michael Irvin.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Like, and that's where what they'll say is football character. There's a difference between moral fiber on the outside world and then football character, mm-hmm. which is, you know, are you going to show up there? Are you going to be there for your teammates? Are you going to play through injury? Are you going to do all this? I played with Jimmy Smith, who was an excellent, excellent, excellent perennial Pro Bowl wide receiver for the Jaguars. He had substance abuse issues for a big chunk of his career,
right.
And then well on past his career. But you would never know it on the football team. You know, maybe guys in the wide receivers room knew, but I think even Keenan McCardle said that they didn't have a clue, that a lot of that was just kind of blindsided them because he was a consummate professional inside the building.
Yeah.
He loved football.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Josh Gordon loves football. And you don't hear – people will say he's a good guy. He's not a bad person. You know, he's not out – he's not committing crimes against other people.
Yeah.
But he's also not necessarily a great teammate when it comes to being prepared.
Got demons.
Yeah, yeah.
Got demons.
So those are all Patriots. Your NFL games.
Those are my three NFL games. I have college ones too, but we don't have to do a deep dive on those.
What are your college picks you feel strongest about?
Auburn -30 over Arkansas.
Okay.
Every year every few years a team comes along in the Power Five that you can just bet against and bet against and bet against until you can't bet against them anymore. And I think Arkansas might be that team this year. They lost to North Texas. North Texas is a pretty decent team, but they lost to them last week. Part of it was that fake fair catch punt return that went viral. But, like, Washington State was a team like that a few years back, right before Mike Leach got there, where they were like, they won like 4 games in 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And the spreads couldn't go high enough. Auburn's favored by 30 over Arkansas, and they're coming off a loss to LSU, Auburn is. So I feel like Gus Malzahn's going to – they're going to want to make statements in these mm-hmm. games because now they've lost a game already, and they're still on the fringe of the playoff conversation because they only fell to 9th in the polls. But that feels like a 60-14 kind of thing.
I heard a theory once. Tell me if this sounds valid at all, and I'm sure you've heard it before too. Was that back in the day when it really mattered for the BCS, or when the AP poll mattered so much, you had huge blowouts by powerful teams because you know that was what looked best to get you a high ranking, and that's gone by the wayside somewhat. Except that is there still a potential that some coaches might realize a lot of our boosters have a lot of money. Bet and gamble on these
totally.
Games. And that total. So that does, like, there's a little bit of a, like, in the back of the coach's mind or maybe the forefront in the fourth quarter. We know to cover that we need to keep the foot on the gas pedal a little bit.
Not every coach, but yeah. I mean, not every coach conducts business that way. Like,
right.
Like, Nick Saban doesn't have, he's you can count on one hand how many games a guy loses in the last decade, but his pattern is fairly predictable. In that it's great to bet on Alabama in the first half, but then he's just going to grind the clock out in the second half. It's always good to bet the under in the second half of Alabama games because they run the ball out. And so what happens in some of the Alabama games is if they're playing against an FCS team or if they're playing against a group of five team or if they're playing against Arkansas, you know, a lower level power five team, it gets a little tricky because the spreads for Alabama are like up in the high 20s and low 30s. And if the other team pops a touchdown in the second half, you know, like Nick Saban doesn't care. He's just trying to get out of there with a win. So I don't know if he's the exception of the rule. But, yes, there are absolutely coaches who are cognizant of it. They'll never say it publicly.
Right. Oh, God, no. They would never put it in a memo or yes.
No, but you can tell by the way they operate that they're, you know, they're looking to help out some of the big boosters.
Is it going to be really tricky to figure out Alabama this year now that they have an actual quarterback? Like, have we ever really seen a Nick Saban Alabama team where you have a quarterback that you're scared of, like the quarterback himself?
Yeah, no, Seth, that's a great question. It's new territory. It's almost like the opposite of what I just said about Arkansas.
Right.
Where we don't know what the ceiling is for Alabama right now. They've never been this efficient offensively. Tua Tagovailoa is 13 for 13 for like 300 yards and 6 touchdowns on third down this year. He hasn't thrown an incompletion on third down.
That's incredible.
We had Johnny Harris on our show this week for his weekly hit on college football. My first question was, hey, Johnny, I've got like week 7 or 8 when Tagovailoa is going to throw his first incompletion on third down. When do you have it? Because that's how good he's been. He's been amazing. You're right. They've never had a quarterback like this. So they're favored over A&M, and I'm not touching that game this weekend just because this is the first decent defense that Alabama's played. But they're playing in Tuscaloosa. They're playing the Aggies in Tuscaloosa, and they're favored by 4 touchdowns.
We've run dry on our reality television concerning football teams. We had discussed maybe venturing outside the world of sports. I do wonder, do you have any time to read during the season at all?
Yeah.
Do you?
Saturdays and Sundays.
I'm reading The Big Game,
okay,
which is that book by the political writer.
Yeah.
It was marketed as this tell-all book about the NFL. It's more of kind of a tell-all book about the NFL, but written from the point of view of a rabid Pats fan.
Okay.
And a lot of it ends up feeling like, okay, I'm going to show what a clown Roger Goodell is.
Yeah.
And I will be very surprised if the final chapter isn't a complete takedown of Deflategate. But we'll see. Part of me also cuts this guy a break because if you're going to write about the NFL over the course of the past 3 seasons, he follows the NFL, how do you take the Patriots out of a huge chunk of it? I mean, the Patriots story and Roger Goodell versus the Patriots and Deflategate and the Patriots – continued dominance is kind of the story of the NFL over these last few years.
What was the story that came – like, when that book first got released, there was a story, I forget, that we were all talking about out of that book. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, boy, there's a few – I mean, for locally, Bob McNair had a couple quotes.
That's what it was.
That were discussed.
That is what it was. That is what it was.
And it's hard to remember which ones were publicly reported at the time and which ones were – unique to this book itself.
Right.
But some of the sniping between owners that goes on is really fascinating in here.
McNair complaining about Goodell's salary.
That's right, which is interesting.
Okay. Because
McNair is on the compensation committee.
The
weirdest thing about it, and the image you start to get of Goodell.
Like McNair complaining that his ticket prices are too high.
Exactly.
I think the Texans charge too much for tickets. You're the owner.
The thing that really comes out of it is it starts to paint this portrait of this extremely paranoid Roger Goodell of this guy. This guy's his goal in life as a teenager was to be commissioner of the NFL.
His only
employer has ever been the NFL. And you get this feeling that this guy's almost too close to ever, like, he almost too fully is born and bred into the NFL for him to realize how ridiculous some of the things he does are. Where other commissioners are usually successful people from other walks of life and they have perspective on things, Roger Goodell is like a Jonestown believer, you know? And like, I feel like he would drink the Kool-Aid. He would take the cyanide pill before he would ever admit that, okay, the NFL might be flawed in some serious ways
that we need to address. That's indicative in his behavior. That's in a way I kind of admire that was a goal he set as a young kid, and there's only one commissioner of the NFL. I know he had, I'm sure was very connected in the ways in which he wound up with that job, but that's part of getting a lot of jobs is knowing the right people and things like that.
And his father was a politician, and they talk about how he learned kind of the way to, I don't want to say glad hand people, but to just be a political soul.
Yeah, I didn't know that story about him. I admire that story about him infinitely more than I admire his actual work as the commissioner of the NFL.
To set your sights on something like that, and I had that thought, in terms of choosing a job that you want in life that isn't one, it's a very elevated one.
Yeah.
But nobody, so few people would actually start off from high school thinking, like, that's the job I'm going after.
Yeah.
You have an immense head start if you pick that job.
No question.
I don't know, man. Like, maybe it's, I don't know what your goal would be. Superintendent of the New York City Public Schools.
Dude.
I'm sure they make pretty good money. So, like, if I were to, when I was 16 years old, say, I'm going to set my sights on being superintendent of the New York City Public Schools.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got a much better chance of attaining that than like setting some other similarly high station, but that is highly sought after, where instead of some kind of stumbling into it like some people, you set your sights on that at the age of 16.
Because most teenagers' goal is to get beer.
Right.
And get laid.
Or to be like, I'm going to be the MVP of the Super Bowl someday.
You and
2 million other kids.
Right.
I'm gonna keep trying to get you out of here under 30 minutes. So
that's okay. I'm going to get my other two college picks, and I'll do these quickly. West Virginia minus 16 over Kansas State.
Okay.
West Virginia's chomping at the bit because they had their last game canceled from the hurricane, so they had a week off, and Kansas State goes to Morgantown. And I'm going to continue to bet against Florida State until the odds makers induce me not to. That is the worst coached football team I've ever seen.
I feel like that's –
thank you to Syracuse while Mike Meltzer is in the room.
I might have – that. My gut would have told me that was a good strategy, and now that you've confirmed it, Sean the Badger.
I like that.
Gamblecast.tv.
Yeah. Northern Illinois plus 10.5, by the way, is their opponent this weekend.
Oh, okay.
I am betting on Northern Illinois in Tallahassee. That's how bad
for
Florida
Northern
State
Illinois
is.
To only be plus 10.5 versus the Florida State Seminoles.
Bobby Bowden's rolling over in his grave.
I feel bad for Travis Johnson and all my other Florida
Bobby
State
Bowden's
fans.
Still alive, I think. Right? Is Bobby Bowden still alive?
He's
rolling over in his.
He's rolling over in a pot of gravy, is what
tapioca
is. Les Miles has gotten skinny as hell. I don't think Bobby Bowden gives a damn.
Dude, and he's stylish too. Les Miles, he's got on like the skinny jeans and like the untucked shirt. He's doing podcasts.
That's right. All right, awesome, man. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.